From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Cryptozoology with Lauren Coleman. Looking forward to that. And as you know, Linda Moulton Howe is always on the last Thursday of the month, which is right now. But she's taking care of some family matters. She'll be back with us next month, the last Thursday. Here's what's happening. What an unbelievable story. Let me take a moment to tell you about this. This has nothing to do with not caring about people, but this has got to be one of the dumbest moves I've ever heard. A U.S. medical charter flight from Cartersville, Georgia, to evacuate two American charity workers has left to Liberia to pick up infected people infected with Ebola. Two American charity workers. They have Ebola. They're in bad shape. They may even die before they get here. Why are they bringing them to the United States? The fatality rate is 90% in most cases. It was not immediately known when the two Americans, identified as Dr. Kent Brantley and Nancy Reitbull, would arrive in the United States or where the plane would land. Now, at least one of the two will eventually be taken to a hospital at Emory University near the headquarters of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Brantley and Reitbull are described in stable but grave condition, both reportedly taking a turn for the worse overnight. I don't even know what their condition is right now. There is no known cure or vaccine for Ebola, which the World Health Organization says is believed to have infected 1,323 people in the West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria between March and July 27th. Of those suspected cases, it's believed to have been fatal in at least 729 cases already. This is a huge story. Look, I feel sorry for these two people who have contracted Ebola. But they're in grave condition. There's not much they can do here in the United States. Hospitals can't do much here. Keep them where they are. But they're going to bring them into the United States. And look, as much as they say that this virus will not get out, why take that chance? I hope people at Homeland Security are watching this very closely, because what a way to create havoc in a country. After weeks of fighting and hundreds of deaths, some semblance of peace may be coming to the Middle East, at least temporarily. The UN Secretary General and the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, have announced that an unconditional humanitarian ceasefire is beginning as I speak in Gaza. It will last 72 hours, 3 days, unless extended, according to the United Nations and the United States in a joint statement. Jerry Corsi, of course, noted author, writes for WND.com. I hope this holds up, Jerry, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, George. The other truces that have been attempted have not lasted. And this is a critical time for trying to get peace in the Middle East. But the underlying problem is that the Gaza is still very militarized, and Israel discovering these tunnels, which opened the possibility of what looks like a planned attack on September 24th at the beginning of the Jewish New Year, was one where Hamas could have sprung up in the middle of Israel and wreaked havoc, killing people in Israel, and along with missile attacks, and Israel's trying to defend itself. So whether the Gaza can ever be demilitarized, whether Hamas will stand down and agree to the survival of Israel, these are the fundamental questions which are not yet resolved.
I'll tell you one thing, too, Jared. The amount of tunnels that Israel is finding now, unbelievable. Somebody dropped the ball there on the Israeli side to let so many of these tunnels get built.
It's a question whether military intelligence in Israel was really aware of how many tunnels there are. But there were at least 11 tunnels which is stretched underneath Israel, and they're now in the process of being destroyed. But the tunnel network was much more extensive than was initially reported. And it's frightening to think of the danger to the nation of Israel that was represented by these tunnels. But yet, George, is also, you know, a humanitarian tragedy when the war is going on. There's 200,000 displaced people in Gaza, and the Palestinian side is suffering. So, and I think Israel is aware of this, as is the United Nations. So let's hope that the truce does stand, and let's hope that some reason can come into both Hamas and Israel to resolve the situation peacefully.
What are you working on now, Jerry? I know you never stop.
Well, George, I have a book on the Battle of Bastogne coming out in November.
Okay.
And I'm looking very much forward to that. So I had a chance to really write a book of history on one of the critical battles of World War II that has fascinated me since I was a child. I'm very excited about this book being published.
Okay, let us know when it's all done. Thank you. Jerry Corsi. Well, the stock market took it on the chin today. Dow dropping over 300 points. That might not seem a lot because it's only 1.88%, but it's an indicator of a lot of unrest there. They're concerned that the Feds may increase interest rates, so we'll just keep watching that. Every guest I've had on Coast to Coast says the stock market is grossly inflated and look for a huge, huge downturn there. A Chicago man, a sign of the times, recently demoted in a downsizing, shot his company's CEO, critically wounding the man. Then he killed himself in front of 10 horrified witnesses. Both men were found with gunshots to the head and lying on the floor inside the Bank of America building there. They work for a company called AeroStream. The gunman, a 59-year-old executive at the company, was pronounced dead at the scene. His CEO, identified as Stephen LaJoy, was taken to a Northwestern Memorial Hospital in critical condition. The shooter was demoted last week. He went into his workplace and shot his boss. What's happening to people? That's why I'm bringing in Howard Bloom for a moment. Howard, it gets stranger and stranger and stranger.
I know. And the weird thing is this. I hate to hit you with good news, but listen to a few of these statistics. Boko Haram in Nigeria has killed over 2,000 civilians in nearly 100 attacks in 6 months. 1,400 civilians have been killed in Gaza. ISIS, you know, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, which
yes.
now just calls itself the Islamic State, killed 700 people in 2 days just 2 weeks ago. 11,000 people have been killed since the late 1980s in Kashmir, which is another battle of Muslims versus non-Muslims. And there are battles going on in Xinjiang, China, where there are jihadists who are springing into places with knives and killing as many as 30 or 40 people at a time. Now, all this sounds terrible. It sounds like the end of the world. But in reality, this is really going to sound strange, because every death is the end of an infinite life. That life will seemed an infinity to the owner of that life, and now that life is utterly, completely, and irrevocably gone. But the fact is that these figures are so small compared to the figures of World War I and World War II. In a single day, in a single battle in World War I, 200,000 people were killed. There is a point that's made in my first book, The Lucifer Principle, and it's made in Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, that the rate of peace has gone way up. It's gone up by a factor of nearly 10. The risk that you and I and anybody listening to us right now runs of dying a violent death at the hands of a fellow human being is one-tenth of what it was in a tribal society that supposedly lived at peace with the world and harmony with nature. It's one-tenth what it would have been 350 years ago. In 1650, in our own society, in Western society. And you can see that in the fact that our crises, the headlines are just as big as ever before. They are just as gruesome and frightening as ever before. But the numbers are way, way down.
Howard has a book out, by the way, at Amazon. It's an ebook. It's called The Mohammed Code. So go take a look at that. Howard, what do you think of this case of letting these two very sick health workers into the United States? They've got Ebola. They may not even live during the flight.
Well, I think you were right, and I hate to say that, because you think of people who dedicated their entire lives to helping other human beings and who may now die because of a result, because as a result of their own kindness. And you want to do everything possible. You want to help them. You want to make sure that if they do die, they die here in the United States, their own homeland. But the fact is that tens of hundreds or even more people could die if Ebola gets
exactly
loose
if it gets
in North
out
America.
We're in trouble. Howard, thank you so much. Howard's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Strange story going social, roaming countryside roads, and outside of a small Appalachian town, the mysterious woman in black may have finally reached her final destination in Winchester, Virginia, after being spotted in numerous states and gathering a massive social media following for weeks. Winchester police say the woman in black is also known as Elizabeth Poles. She's 56. She intends on staying in Virginia after being seen wandering around in Georgia, Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky, sparking tens of thousands of social media followers, taking photos, creating rumors about the woman, who told onlookers, "I wish people would mind their own business." Whatever that means. In a moment, New York Times best-selling author with us for a couple hours, David Wilcock, his latest work, The Synchronicity Key. David is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Wilcock with us. David, of course, is a New York Times best-selling author, regular guest on Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, host of Wisdom Teachings on Gaiam Television as well. David's very far-reaching investigations have delved into ancient civilizations, consciousness, science. His latest work is called The Synchronicity Key, The Hidden Intelligence Guiding the Universe and You. David, you've done it again. Good job.
Well, thank you, George. It's pretty awesome to hit it out of the park twice writing books like this.
It sure is. It sure is. Who's been pitching for you to hit those pitches so far, huh?
Jesus, of course.
Of course. Tell me a little bit about the synchronicity key.
Well, the objective behind writing this book was to try to understand what the spiritual course is that we're all following on Earth and how we can delineate that scientifically. In the first book, The Source Field Investigations, I basically took 5 books worth of information, crammed them all together into one. That's why there was 1,000 references at the back. And that book really takes all the scientific heavy lifting out of proving that UFOs exist. It proves anti-gravity could happen. It proves teleportation. And more importantly, it proves that we live in a biological universe, a universe that is alive and conscious and has an identity. But it didn't really go into what that identity is very much or what the objective is. And so in the second book, I sort of take it into more of a philosophical direction. People say that it kind of connects with them spiritually on a deeper level in terms of the struggles they face. And the reason why I picked synchronicity for the title is to explain to people that you're not living in a dark room with no light. You just have opportunities that you may not be aware of to understand that the world that scientists tell you exists, as we often talk about on Coast with many of your guests, is not the world that really is.
You spend a lot of time talking about reincarnation. How come?
I think reincarnation is something that explains the big picture much more fully than most people realize. I think the big picture ultimately is soul evolution that takes place over multiple lifetimes. This concept that we only have one life to live has been completely deflated with scientific investigation. And we could go on and on. You know about this, George. You've talked to many people about near-death experiences and hypnotic regression, mm-hmm. where people go in between lifetimes. The work of Dr. Michael Newton is particularly compelling in that he shows that everybody goes through the same 10 stages in between one lifetime and the next. And what you find out is that no matter how negative or seemingly evil or otherwise just spiritually disassociated someone is in their waking life, if you hypnotize them, everyone goes to a place where they remember who they are and they remember what they're doing here. And that's where you find out that everybody understands they're a spiritual being and that they have a reason and a purpose for why they're alive. And reincarnation gives us an opportunity to spread that purpose out over multiple lifetimes. So if we don't nail it the first time, we get to come back and do it again and do it again and do it again.
Have you ever had any doubts, David, that the other side indeed exists?
I think I would sound like a zealot if I said that I never had any doubts. But I would say that I've always been reasonably sure, and my doubt was heavily diminished by a few different things. One was having an out-of-body experience when I was five, because if I'm floating up in the air and my body's down there in bed breathing and it's still alive, then if that's me down there, then who the hell am I?
Yeah.
And then when I was in high school, I did this hyperventilation technique where I had my friend essentially choke the blood off to my brain, and I went into this past life type of thing where I had my life flash before my eyes, except it was a life in some sort of Sumerian culture. And you can laugh. I'm sure there are people laughing right now, but the point is that when I woke up, I had broken my little toe, and it was extremely painful. It was way off to the side, and he had to snap it back in.
Ouch.
And my whole body, you know, I was very, very dizzy, and I had this terrible ringing in my ears, and I felt terrible. I almost threw up. And I really do think that I had a near-death experience, except that in my case, I sort of rewound the tape to this other lifetime and saw my life flash before my eyes, a series of snapshots from that life. And that definitely, but it still took years before I said that reincarnation was real. It, you know, these things can happen to you, and you still do have doubt.
Sure.
It takes, I think there's such a, there's such an inertia, there's such a gravity that wants to pull us back into the quote-unquote real world that oftentimes we need many, many demonstrations of proof to understand that there is a reason for us to have faith in the goodness of the universe and the reality of an afterlife.
Well, you know, and the closer one gets to the finish line, the more I think one questions, maybe not necessarily doubt, but one questions whether that other side exists. And you know, then they come around again. They go through this metamorphosis, this change. I know I have, David.
Well, we could die at any time. I mean, you know, people on the airplane, sometimes you see them and they're all tense, and it's like, that's the safest part of your trip. They tell you that sometimes.
Yeah.
When you get back in the car, that's a lot more dangerous, especially in Los Angeles here. I mean, everybody is trying to get there faster than you, no matter how fast you're going.
Ever drive on the freeway with the sun facing you?
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
The 101 or the 405, they're both equally bad, and it's just like...
And then they all stop, and you can't...
Yep.
Oh,
and it's like you got split seconds to decide.
Yep. You're hoping they don't cut you in, someone stops in front of you, and then you got to worry about the guy who's going to rear-end you.
Leaving the city is like going on vacation, I'll tell you.
Something else. Well, let me ask you about synchronicity, then we'll get back into some of the other things that you've written in the synchronicity key. What do you think it is in this universe, because we both agree it's out there, that allows these hidden forces, and you touched about this in the source field investigations, that just makes this stuff work, makes it happen?
I think the universe is way, way more interesting and mysterious than we've given it credit for. I think that our conventional scientific viewpoint is akin to the dugout canoe or stone knives and bearskins. We're dealing with a reality of cosmic consciousness. We're dealing with awareness as the progenitor of reality and matter. And once you rearrange your philosophical perspective that way, it's actually a bigger shift than going from flat Earth to round Earth. Because what we're doing is we're going from life only exists here on Earth to life is actually abundant and plentiful, and it's the whole cosmos is absolutely teeming with life, from microbial life straight on up through intelligent bipedal hominid life like us, which is apparently very widely distributed throughout our galaxy. And there's been some very, very cool developments since about June 22nd with NASA and mainstream media, which I'm sure you've been covering. I haven't listened to all your episodes, but mainstream NASA scientists saying that the number of inhabited worlds with highly intelligent life is as plentiful as all the grains of sand on all the beaches in the world.
Did we ever think we'd hear that from them?
I didn't. I never did.
No. Hey, David, stay with us. We're going to hit this break and come right back and talk more with you about the synchronicity key. David Wilcock, our special guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we'll spend an hour with David to take your phone calls. He's got one heck of a brain, I'll tell you that. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, David Wilcock with us. We're talking about his latest work, The Synchronicity Key. And David, I think the subtitle of the book, of course, The Hidden Intelligence Guiding the Universe and You, is equally important. Let's talk about that for a moment. What is this hidden intelligence?
It's difficult to explain it in a soundbite, but I'll do my best. I think that ultimately what we are going to discover as we get deeper and deeper into this is that there is only identity in the universe, and the identity is ultimately singular, and any concept of separateness from that identity is an illusion that is crafted for the universe to become more aware of itself and to learn from itself. So ultimately we are all the creator. We are all going through this dance that the universe was built for, which is you have stars that are grouped together in galaxies, and the stars have planets, and the planets ultimately, if they're in the right configurations, get intelligent life. And intelligent life appears to be separated from the cosmos, but that's the holographic illusion that we're suffering through right now, is we think that we're separate. But the truth of spiritual growth is to understand and recognize that we are fundamentally interconnected with one another. And once we do that, it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, to want to hate one another and to want to fight with one another. Because if we're all ultimately the same identity, then to hate someone else or to hurt someone else is to hate or hurt yourself.
Well, they seem to be doing a lot of that these days.
It does appear that the world is getting more polarized, so that as your friend, I believe his name was Howard Bloom, was
Howard
saying,
Bloom. Yep.
Yeah, the actual incidence of violence have gone way, way down, and I've been tracking that for quite some time.
David, as you look at synchronicity, and to me, I think it's one of the wonders of the universe, how these things work. I mean, you're thinking about somebody and they call you, or, you know, you run into them. I mean, this tie-in, this, you know, as Lynn McTaggart would call the force, it's there. It permeates. It's everywhere. But it's amazing how it works.
I think that it's becoming increasingly obvious to people, and the skeptics who are the most apt to try to debunk something like this may be living their lives in ways where it's less likely to occur for them. So because they haven't had the personal experience of it as much or at all, they therefore discount everyone else's experience. But it is absolutely a fact that synchronicity will start to occur if you invite it in and you begin considering the possibility that it could happen. So it's a strange thing, but the universe does appear to operate on a prime directive. It's based on free will. So you're going to get some synchronicity if you're a staunch skeptic. And it's funny because I have met skeptics who get synchronicity type experiences and they just dust it off and say, oh, it's a coincidence. That doesn't mean anything. But if you start to pay attention and you start to listen and you start to say, my God, if that really happened, then what does it mean? How could it have happened? You start asking more and more questions, and the answers get bigger and bigger and bigger until ultimately you realize that the scientific method that we're using right now is fundamentally flawed, because you can't necessarily prove synchronicity in a laboratory with repeatable experiments. You need to actually have an experiential knowledge of it, and it's not something that you can predict in advance.
No, it definitely isn't. The fact that it works, do people have to be tuned in order to use it, or does it just happen?
I think that synchronicity is a gradual way of waking us up to the truth. So if you're paying attention to it, you're going to get more of it, but I think everybody gets it to some degree. And there are increasing numbers of scientific studies that actually prove that we do receive telepathic information, regardless of whether our conscious mind is aware of it or not. For example, Dr. William Broad sits a person in a room, and they get spied on with a closed-circuit camera. They don't realize that there's a hidden camera in the room. But during the time that someone stares at them on the monitor in a totally separate location, their actual skin electroconductivity, called galvanic skin response, skyrockets. Now, they might not have any idea consciously that somebody's staring at them, but their nervous system reacts the same way that it would in the animal kingdom when you perceive a sudden threat. So we are wired into each other. We just have built this ego that oftentimes doesn't listen to these instincts that we have.
Back in the 1970s, David, a television consultant for local newscasts used to do surveys via galvanic skin testing.
Yeah.
And that's how they would hire their television anchor people.
Wow.
And if they got a great response or a response with a galvanic skin test, they'd hire the person. If they got no response or minimal response, they would not. And believe it or not, his stations that he consulted for were number one in the ratings.
That's a really funny thing you made me think of, because I was a science geek as a kid, big surprise. And among other dubious achievements, such as building a bomb, you know, one of the things I did was I built a galvanic skin response machine.
Did you really?
Using a Radio Shack electronics kit. And I tested our principal of the elementary school, Mrs. Audrey Farnsworth, and she didn't have any galvanic skin response. And there's all these people standing around. It was like the superintendent and all these head mucky mucks. And I said, "Well, Mrs. Farnsworth, you appear to be dead."
I love it. I love it. Did you test it on yourself?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great lie detector.
It is, yeah.
And I won't say who, but there was a girl in sixth grade who'd already had sex with somebody, and I interrogated her and said, "Did you, in fact, have sex with that man?" And woo, the thing went crazy.
Sixth grade?
Yeah.
That's jailbait.
Yeah, that was notorious.
Unbelievable.
That was notorious in my school.
You have talked a lot about, in your work, that history does indeed repeat itself. Explain.
This is a big subject, and it's a subject that is so absolutely fascinating that I had to devote half of a 500-page book to laying out the data, and it's dense. I mean, it's just fact, 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 fact. What's fascinating is that events that occur in our history are actually repeating in very, very precise ways. I believe on this show before, I mentioned the crossover of the age of the zodiac. We've all heard that term. We're moving into the age of Aquarius. Well, why would this 2,160-year length of time be so important to ancient people? It turns out that much like a phonograph album, we're moving through this cycle and the track overlaps. So the things that happened in the previous cycle are going to happen again in the next one. And it's astonishing to make a direct comparison between Roman history in the age of Aries and American history 2,160 years later in the age of Pisces, because not only do World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, even weird things like the Watergate scandal repeat holographically, but it appears that the people themselves are actually reincarnating. So that, for example, the most stunning one is Hannibal, who's a Carthaginian general that was fighting against Rome, and he reincarnates as Hitler. And, I mean, you look at the pictures of these two guys, and Hannibal is Hitler with a full beard, period. It's the same face. Hannibal invades exactly the same lands using very similar military strategies in the exact same number of years, exactly 2,160 years apart. And the way I originally discovered this was by looking at the first false flag that Hitler ever did against his own country in order to get them jump-started into World War II. And then I went backwards in time by 2,160 years just to see, you know, I wonder if Hitler's floating around.
That was burn. He burned something down, didn't he, or something like that?
It was actually called the Gliwice incident. And what he did is he bombed his own radio station.
Yeah.
And it was the number one radio station means of communication for Nazi Germany, and they blamed it on Poland. You dial it back 2,160 years ago, and this is exactly when Hannibal had his brother killed who had inherited the throne. His brother's name was Hasdrubal. And I'm looking at this saying, well, isn't that interesting? Because nobody's officially, even now, all these years later, nobody officially blames Hannibal for the murder, but it's pretty darn obvious because Hannibal got the brother's head and was very excited about it.
Jeez. And you, of course, have been told that you're the reincarnated Edgar Cayce.
It's a fascinating study. And, you know, you look at the facial similarity and it's
very
bang
close.
On.
Very
We've
close.
Had that verified by portrait artists and police forensics specialists. And also the similarity in character and talent and the similarity of an ever-increasing number of people in Cayce's life. There's a book called Edgar Cayce's Photographic Legacy, which is a huge compilation of photographs that he took. And it has pictures of all the people that he knew. And I found that book originally in 1997. And it has been this fascinating odyssey of discovery ever since, because the sheer number of people I know who look exactly like people that were closest to Cayce is way beyond any statistical margin of chance.
Do you think you're the reincarnated Edgar Cayce?
I think that there is a soul vibrational link of some kind. I would caution to use reincarnation in the traditional sense only because I believe that when a soul makes an impact as big as Cayce did on humanity, that soul may in some sense become almost like a matrix or an archetype that multiple people can then embody. So I would say that I'm probably the best Xerox copy out there, but I would also say that there are many other people who, to varying degrees, would also qualify as a reincarnation.
Where does the devil fit into all of this, David?
Well, let's look at what the term Satan actually means. Ha-Shatan is the original derivation of Satan, and it means the adversary. I believe ultimately we will find that the universe is a singular conscious being, and that at some point early in its development, there was a veil created in people like us between the conscious mind and the superconscious mind. And that veiling actually sped up the evolutionary process quite considerably. But it also allowed for a part of the universe to become self-aware and declare itself separate. So I think that the essence of evil is akin to a child who has rebelled against the fact that the parents have given it rules. The child doesn't like the rules. The child says, F you, I'm going to do it my way. And my way is better than your way, and I'm going to take this whole thing over. You wait and see. I'm stronger than you. I'm bigger than you, and I can do it. But the thing is, the cosmic plan never allows for the negative to succeed. And this is where, in my book, I talk about the actual blueprint of soul evolution called The Hero's Journey, which Joseph Campbell so elegantly delineated as the core of every major mythology that's ever stood the test of time. And I found out coming here to Hollywood that every single movie you see is actually written with this blueprint, which you never call it a formula, they call it structure. And it has to have a villain. The villain is written into the cosmic plan of the universe. The villain is there to inspire the hero to grow and to overcome his or her flaws, which is the basis of the whole cosmic story. The hero starts out with flaws. The hero has a quest to overcome those flaws. The hero faces off against a nemesis that essentially embodies the flaws. The hero experiences triumph over the nemesis. And then all the qualities that the nemesis was a projection of in the hero are absorbed into the hero, and the hero reaches the state of transcendence where he or she then accesses the cosmic consciousness. So the really, really pure myths and the best movies have the hero character get blown into some alternate parallel reality, like you see at the end of the movie Contact.
But you believe there's evil.
Absolutely. But I believe that evil is kept in its place by the natural yin-yang balance of the universe,
mm-hmm.
without the yang, the yin doesn't have any relevance per se, because apparently in the beginning of the universe, there was no dark, and people were extremely bored, and they spent many hundreds of thousands of years reincarnating without making any progress, because everybody knew they were interconnected, but then they had no desire to do music or art or creativity or strive for anything or build anything, and it was just very boring, and everybody just sort of sat around.
So tell me a little bit about free choice, David. Do we have it?
You'd like to think, but if you look at these cycles of history, it starts to get weird. And again, I'm only just giving you the briefest thumbnail sketch of this stuff. But some things are not determined by free will. Some things just happen because they're on a schedule. And I think the coolest part of this is that there is a greater order to this pattern of hero's journey events that's written into history itself. And what I mean by that is you can take certain stories like Joan of Arc and you just cut off the beginning and ending of the story, twist it up like a sausage, and bam, you've got a movie. Her life is archetypal. Her life is the hero's journey. Beginning, middle, and ending, it's all there. So that's an example of an actual historical pattern of events that fits this story very precisely. And of course, many great movies and plays have been written based on patterns of real historical events. Well, I take it one step further by saying that history itself keeps telling us this story, and we are all individually and collectively the hero in the hero's journey. And ultimately, if you want to go Christian for a minute, the hero is Christ. Jesus fits the story as well as any religious leader we've ever seen on earth. The story of Jesus is the hero's journey, period. All of the events that happen, including the crucifixion and the resurrection, are totally embodiments of this galactic cosmic archetype of soul evolution that we're all going through.
If we really can pinpoint this as individuals and understand it, I bet we can do some amazing things, don't you?
Well, certainly. If you look at what happens in Tibet, they had the second Buddha, or Padmasambhava, who showed up around 800 AD, thereabouts. And this guy apparently had six fingers. You see that in the handprint that he left behind at one of the temples in Nepal. And he's going around. Everywhere he goes, he's leaving handprints and footprints in the rock. He can mush his hand and foot right into the stone, just like it's soft clay. And it's from his teachings that the indigenous Tibetan religion that was called Bon was then merged with his own unique spin on Buddhism that leads to Tibetan Buddhism. And that lineage, called the Nyingma sect, has now led to 160,000 people documented who do not die, but they transfigure themselves into light at the end of their life. And the last guy who did this was just last November. So it's still happening. The Chinese military has actually observed this process where people's bodies shrink down and transfigure directly into light. So,
like a beam of light and they're gone?
It's like a rainbow pinwheel of light, apparently. And it takes 7 days in some cases, but in cases like Padmasambhava, he just disappears and is gone. So that strongly leads me to believe that there's some sizzle behind that steak. We got to see what the steak is and not just look at the sizzle. Yes, the story of Jesus is amazing, and I very much am inspired by it. And let's not limit ourselves to thinking what the Roman cabal essentially used as a form of government repression of saying, you know, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, that's it. If you don't accept salvation through Christ, you're not going to make it, period. Well, I think the core is really that there's lots of ways to get there as long as you understand the spirit of what Christ represents, which is love.
David, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next hour on Coast to Coast AM.